Welcome back to Ecclesiastes chapter 5 today, as Solomon continues his observation of life under the sun. He is once again people watching, still on his great quest to find out what is worthwhile in life, and what is gained by all our toil. In chapter 5, his observation moves first to the house of God and then back to work, and especially at wealth and poverty. We begin at verse 1. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know what they do wrong. The first observation at God's house is the sacrifice of fools. Empty promises. Too much talking, not enough hearing. So what's your priority when you step into God's house? Solomon says, go near to listen. Verse 2. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven, and you are on earth, so let your words be few. In other words, if you sing out, Lord, I give you my heart, then walk out of church and back to selfish living, that is the sacrifice of fools. And when we treat church like it's a bargain hunt for God's blessings, we miss the point. Verse 4. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to fulfill it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to make a vow than to make one and not fulfill it. Then verse 7. Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, fear God. That means stand in awe, and that is where wisdom begins. Now remember that Solomon is far from God. There's no intimacy here, as we see in David's Psalms. And for us, in Christ, we are invited by God himself to come boldly before the throne of grace and to call him Abba, Father. Yet that is not an invitation to impress him with your eloquence or fervor, nor is it a call to multiply words or sing without thinking. Psalm 51 describes the sacrifices that God accepts, a broken spirit and a contrite heart. These things God will not despise. So come boldly before God, not to make empty vows, but to offer him the pieces of your broken heart. If your life is his, it is his. So wait and listen and heal. Now in verse 8, Solomon walks out of God's house and back into the world, and he sees again injustice. Verse 8, if you see the poor oppressed in a district, and justice and rights denied, do not be surprised at such things. For one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both are others higher still. The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from the fields. Solomon says, don't be surprised at poverty, because there are so many takers. In a self-centered world where everyone takes, and those on top don't care who pays as long as they get their cut, most of us end up poor. Now keep in mind that God's law provided the Israelites with a system that was people-centered, without endless levels of hierarchy to tax and take. But the people demanded a king, and God warned them, kings come with taxes. But Solomon digs deeper. It's not just taxes and takers. The root issue is money love. Verse 10, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This, too, is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? There's some powerful insight here, and studies bear it out. A study here in America a few years back showed that among affluent Americans, 85% worry about money, and 40% worry all the time. It's people who have plenty of money. Only 20% actually consider themselves affluent. Somewhere along the way, the American dream became the American deception. The study's conclusion, the more money people have, the more they think it takes to be rich. My conclusion, more money, more problems. But notice, money itself is not the problem. The love of money never satisfies, never brings contentment. And Jesus tells us it's the root of all kinds of evil. But Solomon sees another option. In verse 12, the sleep of the laborer is sweet. whether they eat little or much. But as for the rich, their abundance permits them no sleep. Then verse 13, I have seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owners, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when they have children, there is nothing left for them to inherit. Wow, wealth harming its owners. It's a reality. Did you know that most lottery winners confess that they lose many friendships to greed and envy? And in just 3 to 5 years, lottery winners are more likely to declare bankruptcy than the rest of us. Seriously, they're also more likely to struggle with depression, divorce, and suicide. Bad dates, dead monkeys. Or how about professional athletes? Those guys are living the dream, right? A 2009 Sports Illustrated article revealed that 78% of NFL players are either bankrupt or under serious financial stress within 2 years of retirement. That's it, 2 years. In the NBA, 60% go bankrupt in 5 years, and baseball isn't far behind. And yet, we fill our kids' heads with dreams of the big time. Bad dates, dead monkeys. Like the Switchfoot song has it, when success is equated with excess, the ambition for excess wrecks us. Switchfoot, by the way, one of my favorite bands, and the perfect musical embodiment of Ecclesiastes. Love them. Verse 15. Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands. This, too, is a grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. And what do they gain since they toil for the wind? All their days they eat in darkness, with great frustration, affliction, and anger. And in verse 18, Solomon again sees a better way. This is what I have observed to be good, that it is appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun, during the few days of life God has given them, for this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. I love that phrase. They don't have time for worry because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. At the heart of Solomon's conclusion is the goodness of contentment. Find satisfaction in your work. That's a gift from God. Life is a gift, and gifts are meant to be enjoyed. Do you know what it feels like when you give someone a gift and they appreciate it, but they just don't bother to enjoy it? I wonder if God feels that way toward us. And it can happen in church, too. 1 Timothy warns against those who think that godliness is a means to financial gain. It's a lie. But, Paul says, godliness with contentment is great gain. Did you catch that? Great gain. Exactly what Solomon is searching for. Paul found it in Christ. In Philippians 4, Paul says that he has learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. Imagine that. Content. Always. If you could put that in a jar and sell it, you could make billions. Actually, I have it in a jar. My memory verse jar for my kids. You want it? Just look it up. Philippians 4. Man, when I learned it, everything changed. I remember early days in ministry, scraping by, driving a beat-up, faded-out 89 Toyota pickup. One day, I looked in the lane next to me. Gorgeous new Corvette, the car of my boyhood dreams. And I looked at the guy and realized just how far that God had brought me. I thought about the driver, and it struck me. What I have, he can't buy. What he has, I don't even want. Jesus did that to me. Read Ecclesiastes 5. Draw near to God to listen, and he just might tell you the secret of contentment.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.